Hello there, and welcome to this episode of the Movies in Focus podcast. I'm Niall Brown. Now, it's usually hyperbole to say that somebody does it all, but in the case of Larry Fessenden, it just so happens to be true. An award-winning actor, producer, writer, director, and editor, Fessenden is a genre filmmaker with a real skill in delivering works that entertain, but also have a fair amount of nuance and sophistication. Fessenden's latest film is Blackout, a werewolf horror film with a top-notch cast that includes Alex Hurt, Addison Timlin, Marshall Bell, and Barbara Crampton amongst its number. The film is not only a fantastic old-school horror pick, but it also features plenty of added social commentary, and that makes it a cut above other modestly budgeted genre films. Larry Fessenden joined the Movies in Focus podcast to talk about Blackout, the inspirations behind the film, and his love of werewolf films. As always, I hope you enjoy what we have to talk about.
Do you like my sheep?
It's a fantastic... Is that actually wool or is it...
I know, I'm in a strange hotel. This is their decor, so I thought I would share the screen space with the little fella.
You're really rocking it, Larry, I'll say that.
Yeah, I think so.
And it kind of works when you're talking about a werewolf film. It's sort of...
Yeah,
it sort of fits into the concept.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, thank you for taking the time today, Larry.
Wonderful to see you.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed the film. I personally have a love of werewolf films that I don't think they make enough of them. So thank you for going out there and doing one.
Yeah, thank you. I agree. They're much rarer than vampires and zombies, God knows. And so, it's a genre I'm very fond of. A monster I love, so it was fun to get my hands on.
And, I mean, the film Blackout, it's a really great horror movie and it's a great werewolf movie, but it's more than that. It's a social commentary, not to kind of make it sound kind of highfalutin, but there's depth to it that you don't normally get in sort of films like this. And I was watching it and I thought, did you come up with the idea that you wanted to make a werewolf movie first? Or did you come up with the concept of small town America kind of pulling itself apart? What was the origin for it?
Well, if you really think about a werewolf, it's a divided personality. And it so happens within our national landscape, at least in America, we're very divided now. And there's a lot of reasons for that and half-truths and a lot of mistrust. So, in fact, the themes feel connected. And I always want to make the monster movie first, but I have daily preoccupations about bigger issues of how the world is put together and philosophical concerns and deep frustration with the way the world is run, you know. And so I can't help myself. This is how I respond. And I think the deeper thing is that when I was a kid, I loved monster movies for the aesthetics and for the creatures and the pathos. But I also took them seriously in what the storytelling was. And we all know that Frankenstein is about many things, playing God and whatever. But so when I made a Frankenstein film called The Grave, it ended up being about PTSD and something that was happening in the moment. But so it's, for me, they're blended. And I'm trying to bring new vigor to these old beloved stories and say that they're still relevant to today's dilemmas. And I think horror serves that purpose. It's always... at its best, it's expressing an anxiety of our time. So here I'm trying to participate in precisely that.
And when you're writing something like that, you obviously want to get across a message, but there's also an entertainment factor that, you know, so the artist and obviously the commercial aspect for you. How do you, is that something that you work out in later drafts, or are you always very conscious when you do that?
No, as I say, it's very organic. I mean, I'm aware that any kind of message or thoughtfulness is probably going to work against me. But I work at a low budget because I understand my place. And I ultimately feel an obligation to be as truthful to myself, and with the hope that I'm fulfilling a very small niche. Nobody's asking for these kind of movies. And yet it's really what I want to do with the genre, and what I want to do with my tiny slice of airtime in the world. I'm not calculating, and I feel that these are compelling issues, and there's real horror in the world. The horror is that we are alone in our lives and alone in our perception. And so that just makes sense to me. I want to put that on film and then try to convey something truthful and then let the chips fall where they may in terms of the reception. I'm totally aware that this movie is hard to track for some people. They feel like I've read the word overstuffed more than once. But, you know, to me, all these themes fit together in the same way that my perception of the world is, you know, it's quite a bleak place where we're not connected. And it's a great tragedy. I feel that humanity has missed an opportunity to make a better world. So those are really the themes that I want to convey and bring sadness to these stories. Sadness, even to violence. You know, when somebody is killed in real life in an unfortunate, you know, war events that we're going through, or you know, on the streets or a school shooting, it's not gore. It's sad. Somebody's lost a loved one. So I'm sort of interested in reminding genre fans that there's something very acute, and it's not all for fun. I mean, I don't think to remind people that the world is dreadful, but that's just my perspective.
Can I just say, I didn't think it was overstuffed. I actually thought it was very layered. And I mean, that's one of the great things about the film. I think a good horror film really puts character first and characters first. And your film, no matter how small the part was, like the two men on the road who come across, you know, the car accident, in the space of 30 seconds, you actually felt that they were real characters or people that had lives. And like you said, when they die, you kind of go, they're almost, those men could sustain a film of their own without having to sort of, you know, die at that moment, whatever it might be.
Well, that means the world to me, and that is the agenda. And as I say, it's just not for every taste, but this is what I'm inviting you to extrapolate in, as you say, in a 3-minute scene. My dream is that you really understand these characters. They're partly archetypes, but then they're not. They live and breathe. And I like that you mentioned those two guys. We could mention a number of them, but those two guys, they're sort of bickering, and you say, you sort of understand they're older gay guys living in a rural environment. So they're sort of, they're survivors in their own right. They're dolled up in a certain way, you know, the costume, every choice is important, but they're also the Good Samaritans in the film. And they're even referred to that way by the cop later. So this is what I'm acknowledging, and I appreciate anyone who will read my film this way. I'm weaving all these ideas together. You know, it's like nice guy finished last. You know, they took the trouble to stop the car and investigate this problem, and they got screwed for it. And I'm saying, is that the world we want to be in? So the werewolf is bringing chaos, but often the violence happens, you know, without the werewolf, but, you know, because he's sort of created a chaotic thing. So then you realize the werewolf is a state of mind or whatever. I didn't even have this in mind, but I'm speaking now. anyway, most important is that I love the idea that, you know, you could spend more time with these characters. The same with the kids in the beginning. They have a very specific relationship. The one boy, obviously, the boy, the girl teases him. Have you been fantasizing about this, you know, getting laid in a field? And so then you have this whole idea of like his sexuality and how he wants to, you know, he's an exhibitionist or whatever. I don't know. But the point is, I just want to tease out these ideas. And then, of course, these people get killed and you realize it's not for laughs. It's sad because lives are precious and so on. So that's the bigger theme. It really is the concluding speech. If you see the film, that's the sentiment you're left with, is just appreciate what you have because it ain't going to last. And that's kind of my perspective on the world.
Yeah, and that's what makes the film poignant. You know, obviously you get sort of the horror aspect, but there is, like you said, a humanity, a poignancy to the whole film and to the characters.
Yeah, and you know, it deals with a certain kind of quiet racism, and you know, once again, I'm not really preaching. Everybody knows these are the issues of the day, and you can come on whatever side or find your solutions. But I'm not going to shy away from it because it is, quote, political. Because the reality is, I grew up in the 70s and the 60s and 70s, and the whole agenda of art was to be challenging and engaged with our the choices in our culture and in our society. And I consider that still the mission. As I say, these don't have to be preaching. I'm also talking about vaguer things like sadness and loneliness, and you know, I don't have a prescription, but I actually think, quite honestly, those are also issues of our time. I mean, people are feeling very lost because we don't have a common narrative anymore. Everybody is angry and everyone feels put upon, whether they're the oppressors or not. Everybody is a victim in this society now. So, you know, I'm responding. I'm basically making what I want to make is a werewolf movie. And then I'm responding to the context in which I'm living. I would hope this would have resonance after, because I think the real works of art are saying the same thing for decades, for centuries. You know, issues of morality and what have you, and the human condition.
Well, I agree. I mean, and you touched on it there. You talked about sort of you grew up in the 60s and 70s of those movies. And as I said, they don't make a lot of werewolf films, but the werewolf film that it possibly, it's not very similar to, but in the wittiest sort of context of it, is Wolfen from sort of the early 80s, which was about sort of New York and Native Americans and homelessness. It's kind of got that social consciousness that
well,
you're...
I, you can't go wrong with Albert Finney in my book. And I remember at the time, it was fun to see him in what sort of a contemporary movie. I loved him from like Scrooge and other, you know, British contexts. And there he was being a gritty New Yorker and so on. I loved Wolfen. And they had a sort of a wolf camera. You know, that was kind of their signature. It's always interesting how a production will approach the creature. And much has been made of the fact that I have a wolf man, not a sort of a dog or whatever. Wolfen was very dog oriented,
yeah.
As you say, because they were tapping into Native American concepts and so on. But, you know, it's funny because the reset from the 80s to have the long snout and the 4-minute transformation scene, as much as I loved those as a kid, because you finally saw something that seemed like unseeable in movies, I also felt that they fetishized the transformation in a way that became about the makeup. So, you know, I don't think that's the final word on what a werewolf should be or what a transformation should be. So I felt comfortable to give a try. Now, obviously, there's budget concerns, but I would have always made the makeup the way it was with any number of dollars.
Well, that, I mean, it very much is a Wolfman film. We're talking sort of werewolves, but a Wolfman. I mean, even the town that you've said it is Talbot, which is sort of a homage to sort of the Wolfman, the Lon Chaney. So, I mean, and even the way he moves, I mean, it's a fantastic performance by Alex Hurt. And, you know, the way he, when he runs and he stops and he moves his body, is that something that you'd work with him in that? Or is that just him on his own, or...?
Oh, no, everything you're seeing is some effort on my part to put a werewolf on screen that I have to live with it. So, yeah, we worked on the movement, and I can say that that's influenced by a comic book called Werewolf by Night. And it's drawn, the issues that I care about are very few of them, just the beginning, you know, the start of the comic. It was by Marvel. It was in the 70s. But that creature... hits these poses because it's obviously a comic book, and I wanted to evoke that. And we used to joke with Alex, you know, his mother is a choreographer, so he has dance history. And so I would say I want this to be sort of like Bob Fosse moves. If you know Bob Fosse, he's got very angular dance moves. So Of course, we didn't want to tip too far, and you know, I'll leave it to the audience to decide how we did. But those angular moves you're describing were very deliberate, and even on set, I also would act things out with that kind of movement. So Alex spent a lot of time on that. The other thing I asked is that he really buff up, and again, because of Werewolf by Night, that's sort of in a superhero tradition, meaning it was a comic book from Marvel, and they have the werewolf very buff and just looking fantastic. And I wanted that. And it also helped us save some money because we realized we didn't want to wear a hairy suit, something we talked about. But I was like, I'm not trying to make you forget that this was the Charlie character. In fact, I want you to have this sort of tension. You're looking at a werewolf, but he looks kind of like a man, and you know, that's because this movie also plays in a psychological space.
Well, that's it. I mean, there is the relationship with the estranged wife, and if you turn it too much into, like you were saying, a wolf creature, then that humanity, those moments where they interact, that's lost between the two of them.
Yeah, so that was the idea. And as I say, it's very much my aesthetic. I mean, I like the wolves in Twilight series, for example. This is just not to my taste, where they literally turn into wolves. I always joke about that because the CG is so crude. I mean, they sort of jump in the air and then they're just sort of melt into werewolves. It's not my aesthetic, that's all. Even the irony is that the final wolf in Werewolf of London, is that what it's called? American Werewolf in London, it's also kind of a roly-poly little wolf guy. I love the transformation in the living room, of course, but once he becomes a full monster, it's not entirely to my taste, even though the scene in the subway is one of the great scenes in cinema. this is the point, is I'm just one among many, and I love all the visions out there. And the werewolf is more the disparate possibilities than people might immediately think, because of course dog soldiers, those guys are totally fantastic. You know, they're deliberately sort of giants, and they have a whole thing going, and it goes on and on. Underworld, I guess. I don't know all those movies, but you know, one of the great werewolves is in the Harry Potter series, the third one, I believe. There's a wonderful werewolf in that. So it's a great but subgenre of horror. You know.
Yes, which doesn't get enough. As I said, it doesn't get enough love, and that's why I sort of really appreciated your film and what you did with it. Like I said, it gives you the horror stuff, but there's the humanity as well. And one of the things that comes from that is your casting. The film's got a fantastic cast, but the big parts, the small parts. Talk me through that process and how you got everyone involved.
Well, it's hard. Meaning, you know, you're calling them, it's not going to be a big payday. You might ask them to come to the set for just 2 days. And so I'm lucky to act in a lot of movies, so I know actors through that. And, you know, some of them are callbacks to people who have been in my films, Kevin Corrigan and James LeGros, and then Barbara Crampton and I have worked together. Motel Jim Foster is just fantastic in my son's film, and I really saw him as Earl. I didn't really write for people in particular, but as soon as they were on the page, then the mind starts putting it together. It's like a wonderful puzzle. And of course, I draw from my immediate associates and see if they can fit in. I'm also a little mindful, this sounds also preposterous, but of my own MonsterVerse at a certain point where I can't have repeats of people, because if there was a day when all of these were to sort of be glued together, then I wanted a consistent world. So only Addison has revisited from the three monster films I've made, which is Habit, Depraved, and then Blackout. And maybe there'll be a way to make sense of that eventually. I'm very blessed. I worked with Lois Drabkin. She's a casting agent. I've worked on, she did The Ranger. She did Jack's film, my son's film called Foxhole. And now this, And you know, it's just really fun to talk about people. Finding Marshall Bell was very special. That was James LeGros knew Marshall and recommended him. And of course, he has a wonderful history in the genre from the Verhoeven pictures, and we got a real kick out of working with him. He was my classic patriarch villain, if you will.
A great character in the film.
Yes, and I am a thief like so many filmmakers. I stole a lot of cast members, well, which is to say Ella Ray Peck, from my friend Chris Scotchtepole, who's got a movie coming out soon called Crumb Catcher, and that has Ella Ray in it. She plays the cop in Blackout. She's wonderful. Rigo Garay has worked for me for 10 years, and he finally sort of revealed to me he wanted to be an actor. And so he's in my film. He's also in Crumb Catcher. And then, of course, Spyridakis plays the priest. I know that John is a pious man, so it's fun to let him play that role and really lean into it and bring an earnestness to that character. Because, you know, he said to me, "Thank you for writing a character of the priest that isn't condescending, that they're not a fool." He really is trying to glue this town together. And I think in the morality of the filmmaker, that is an essential thing, even though he's of organized religion, which we usually disparage. But I'm showing that he has an important role in a small town like this. So, you know, whatever, just trying to surprise people and make them rethink cliches. I mean, most lefties would say that the church is troublesome. And I'm saying this guy is a pillar in the community and he's trying to help. He may also seem like an old fuddy-duddy, you know, in the car scene where they're driving, and Alex, which is to say Charlie, is clearly, you know, it's like sitting there with your math teacher. So anyway, that's the world I wanted to create, and a sense of community and all the tensions and the sort of the displaced love and affection and the familiarity people have with each other.
But and again, that's what works. You sort of you have Charlie or you know Alex Hurt's character walking kind of from, I'm not saying it's sort of episodic, but he sort of goes from locale to locale and sort of interacts with these people, and we learn more about the town and the people within it than we almost do about him, and that's sort of we only learn about him towards the sort of the end of the film.
Oh, that's wonderful. I mean, I feel like it's a structure that it's a journeyman film. You know, you are, and he's also sort of putting his house in order. Let's face it, the thing is, you know, the werewolf isn't in it all the time, but that's all you're thinking about in terms of. So I wanted to evoke a perspective in life where, you know, you're being dogged by death itself, or something more peculiar, whatever he's going through. Addiction also can be something that is living by your side at all times. And it's the old cliche is you know an alcoholic when you say, "Would you like a drink?" and they look at their watch. It's because they have their program, whatever it might be. And you know, similarly, the idea of, you know, if you lived with a disease that was encroaching, your life would be different. And so in this story, Alex is going about his business, but there's something amiss. And so it makes his world more acute. And then as he meets the locals, it's almost like he has a knowledge that they don't. And so, you know, it just, I'm also pointing out that he's an artist. So he already sees the world from a slightly different point of view. And I'm trying to convey that. I mean, all I'm doing is just trying to put the audience in a slightly different mindset. I'm not interested so much in plot, but the texture and the themes of a life in this case.
Yeah, and I mean, you touched on it that Charlie is an artist, and the sort of the transformations in your film, which again we've talked about them being sort of about makeup effects in the past. Yours are very impressionistic. They're very much based around art and drawing. Where did that concept come from? I mean, obviously budget limitations, but obviously there's a creative aspect to that as well.
It's very much a creative. One thing in the movie is that I decided he'd be a painter at a certain point. I've actually done that before. I like using other art forms in a movie for one reason or another. I guess I'm just saying there's a greater historical context in which we're making you know, motion pictures. But obviously music is very important in a film. And then there's the notion of sort of the framing and the history of what the arts were concerned with. And what I try to do in Blackout is I show or I suggest that Charlie's early work were landscapes, and that at first he was sort of taking in the world and trying to represent it and showing respect and appreciation for, you know, if you will, God's creation. Well, then as it progresses, you start seeing more self-portraits. And then the self-portraits are actually blurring and just sort of turning into Francis Bacon nightmarish imagery. And it's because he's becoming increasingly self-involved, narcissistic, and, you know, very disturbed. And so I'm suggesting that that's sort of the course that humanity has been on all this time, sort of going from rejecting an outside influence of religion or whatever it might be to a more self-involved. And I'm clearly taking issue with that. I'm suggesting this is the disease that is his werewolfism. So anyway, I also, but once I decided he was a painter, then I thought it'd be fun to show that he sees the world that way. So when he's telling a story, it's depicted through animations, which I got some wonderful people to collaborate. And I also like a film that has textures, you know, that has other sort of things going on. But as I say, this Francis Bacon blur is how I do the cinematic versions of the transformation. I guess there's a couple of them like that. And I just wanted to celebrate, you know, in film, there's a blur if you freeze the frame. Yeah. And so I just wanted to sort of imagine like the old animations they used to do Lon Chaney, you know, where he's lying on a plaster pillow and he's obviously, they put the makeup on and then they take a few frames. Well, I said, what if you loosened up and you just did that, but then you cut to the makeup being advanced. Anyway, I don't know if we succeeded 100%, but that was the world I was in. And I was very happy to do it. No budgetary constraint. That came out of a very artistic agenda.
No, I mean, I thought it was well done. And the scene where he transforms in the car, again, you watch sort of horror movies and people transforming into creatures, and they're normally sitting in their living room or they're somewhere, you know, no one's ever, you know, it's like sneezing, you know, people sneeze in the car, you know, presumably a wolf man is going to transform in the car or whatever. Yeah. It might be. Was that something that you wanted to get across to sort of mix it up a bit?
Well, yeah, the irony is the movie was originally an audio play. In other words, as a script, it's gone through a lot of transformations, if you will. But that was always the center image was just that car accident. And as you say, I just like the idea that your transformation would possibly happen at an inconvenient time. And I try to map out that it only happens because he says to his friend, I'll fill up the tank. And that delays him just that little bit. And then he miscalculates and forgets that he's going to turn into a werewolf. The other thing I like in that moment is I show the moon in the day when he's filling up the tank. And I just love these. There's so many absurdities to the werewolf story. As with most monsters, you know, why garlic with vampires and so on. So I just like that. Yeah, the moon is always there and it's full because of cycles. And he just looks up in the daytime. But imagine that if you had this different relationship to the moon, you'd be like, oh, there you are, fucker. And I know you're going to threaten me. I don't know what the math is, but when the sun goes down, suddenly that will affect me. So, I'm also playing with mythologies and just reminding people that our myths are constructs. And they're not entirely to be trusted. And as long as you know that, you can carry on in the world. But let's not take our own sense of what is right and wrong and use it as a bludgeon for others. So, you know, that's another, if you will, social message is just like I'm reminding people these are just stories and stories are important to us. But, you know, maybe your story isn't the same as mine. That's where we have to come to a broader understanding of our dilemma.
And whilst you're talking about the stories and the myths, to get into a bit of spoiler territory, simply because I've got you and I want to know, and I've got my own thoughts on it, but the film ends, the credits roll, and then it sort of cuts to a, we'll call it a mid-credit sequence where Charlie passes a man on a path. And again, I'll point out that this is spoiler sort of territory slightly. Is that man he passes on the path the wolf man that give him the curse to begin with, and it's almost like him finally getting rid of it and going on somewhere else? Or what does that?
No, I love that. It's beautiful. And I did build something in particular. Another person would ask, who's the monster in the field? He's doing a painting and he's drinking and he's very manic. He's even emotional and seems to have some tears and what's going on. It's a flashback, but he goes out into the field and he sees this peculiar specter out there. It's presumably a OG werewolf, we call it, meaning, some uber werewolf. And then the assumption is that's where his curse began. But I mean, that's open to interpretation what that is, who that is, if it is someone. And the character he passes at the end, talk about spoilers. But I almost don't want to tell you because you've had your own thought, and that's beautiful as well. And that's really the thing about the arts is you lay things out, and I'm very responsible to what I'm doing, but I'm also deliberately creating a certain amount of confusion. You could argue that Charlie was shot by a silver bullet, more spoilers. So he died. So why is he walking down the road? There's a million things that you could argue about, but I always like saying, oh, so let me get it straight. You're questioning the truth, the logic of my werewolf movie, So then you get back to this funny cycle of just like, well, yeah, that's the whole point. We all hold dear the things that we think are true, but it's a freaking werewolf movie, guys.
Yeah, we're looking at the logic behind it. And finally, just before I let you go, I can't not ask about, obviously, Alex Hurt is William Hurt's son, and his father is referenced throughout the film, and you use photographs of William Hurt. Tell me about that, because I mean, I thought it was powerful. So what was it like sort of for Alex, for you, and for the film?
Well, Alex and I, we met on my son's film, actually. He's very good in this film called Foxhole. And so he and I would chat and hey man, so how'd you get into acting? And knowing well that his father was William Hurt. But Alex said, he loved the old Universal horror movies and he loved Boris Karloff, and that's why he wanted to act. And then after that, he obviously revealed his father's influence, and they were both pals and combative when he was young. And he obviously had great respect for this giant of the movies. And we also talked about his father being overbearing and just in general, very warm, but conflicted feeling about the patriarch in his family. And this was exactly what I was looking for. So I invited him to be my Wolfman. And it was just magical. But sadly, William Hurt died before we shot. And so it just brought a certain weight to it. And I think a heaviness for Alex to feel like in some way he was saying goodbye and paying tribute. And he said, if you want to use my photos of my dad, I've gotten the approval from the family. So, we were very respectful. But then what I like is that not only is that just wonderful, these are real pictures of Alex growing up, never mind the famous father. It's cool just to see a
Yeah.
person grow up in a movie and go, oh, I don't know, there's a poignancy seeing a teenager. You're watching him now as a fucked up old man, but or middle-aged dude. So I thought that was poignant. But then there's also, once again, back to the idea of the movie being haunted by the mythology and the story. We know who this William Hurt is. He's the most famous guy in the movie. And so there's that, the audience is remembering Altered States and whatever their relationship is. So it just adds this weird dimension. And I was very happy to do that. And also pay tribute to the idea of family lineage and so it's kind of meta, which I like. We can't make movies without some understanding of the bigger context in which we're making them. So it worked for me, and I was very grateful that Alex was game and excited to do that.
Yeah, no, it was very, very sort of, as an audience member, it was powerful. So it was great. And at that point, I've taken up too much time. So can I just say, Laurie, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you and sort of talking about such a great film.
Oh, well, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate your response to it. So good on you. Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Movies in Focus podcast. You can download it wherever you get your podcasts, and I hope that you tell your friends about it. That's it for this time, and I'll see you at the movies.